Reverend Dr. Davis, Chairman of the North Shore Summer Project, Dr. Bickham, distinguished citizens of the North Shore communities, ladies and gentlemen, it is certainly a delightful pleasure to come to these communities and to have the privilege of being in the midst of such a wonderful and inspiring gathering. Somebody just told me that there are approximately 15,000 people in this area at this time attending this meeting. And I certainly want to express my deep personal appreciation and congratulations to all of the individuals of goodwill who have worked so indefatigably to make this meeting possible. It is a great pleasure to be in Chicago at this time to lend our humble support to the great efforts that are being carried out at this time to expose the injustices which exist in this area. Now, I'm sure you will agree with me in saying that we must solve these problems because this is the chief moral dilemma of America. We have been able to make tremendous strides in the scientific and technological realm, but now we must be sure that we make as many strides in the realm of human relations. As I have said on so many occasions, history has presented us now with a cosmic challenge. We must learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. I would like to say what I have to say tonight under the subject, The American Dream. And I use this subject because America is essentially a dream yet unfulfilled. Substance of the dream is expressed in these sublime words. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is a great dream. Now, the first thing that we notice about this dream is an amazing universalism. It does not say some men, it says all men. It does not say all white men, it says all men, which includes black men. It does not say all Gentiles, it says all men, which includes Jews. It does not say all Protestants, it says all men, which includes Catholics. And that is another thing at the center of the American dream, which ultimately distinguish our system of government from totalitarian regimes. says at bottom that each of us has certain basic rights that are neither derived from or conferred by the state. In order to discover where they came from, it is necessary to move back behind the dim mist of eternity. They are gifts from the hands of the Almighty God. Very seldom, if ever, in the history of the world has a socio-political document expressed in such profound, eloquent, unambiguous language the dignity and the worth of human personality. The American dream reminds us that we are the heirs of a legacy of dignity and worth. But ever since the founding fathers of our nation dreamed this dream, America has been something of a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided against herself. On the one hand, we have proudly professed the great principles of democracy, but on the other hand, we have sadly practiced the very antithesis of those principles. Indeed, slavery and racial segregation have been strange paradoxes in a nation founded on the principle that all men are created equal. Now more than ever before, America is challenged to realize her great dream. For the shape of the world today does not permit our nation the luxury of an anemic democracy. And the price that America must pay for the continued oppression of the Negro and other minority groups is the price of its own destruction. The hour is late. The clock of destiny is ticking out, and we must act now before it is too late. And so in a real sense, those who are working in this area, those who are working to make integration a reality, those who are working to improve the school situation in Chicago and make better jobs a reality for Negro people and for poor people generally, those who are working in the housing area, one of the most serious problems we face, those who are working in this North Shore summer project may well be the saviors of our nation. For they are not engaged in some passing activity. They are not engaged in meaningless action. But they are engaging in action which may well save the soul of our nation. And I submit to you tonight that it is precisely this action that will help our nation rise to its full moral maturity. Now, I would like to suggest some of the things that we must do, that all of us must do, in order to make the American dream a reality. I would like to mention first that we must reaffirm with all of the power in our being the essential immorality and evilness of racial segregation. Segregation is evil, whether it is in educational instance, whether it is in the realm of housing, whether it is in recreational facilities, whether it is in the church itself. Segregation is an evil system. We must reject segregation not merely because it is sociologically untenable, not merely because it is politically unsound, but it is morally wrong and sinful. Segregation is wrong, to use the words of the late and great Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, because it substitutes an I-it relationship for the I-thou relationship. Now, to use the thinking of St. Thomas Aquinas, segregation is wrong because it's based on human laws. They're out of harmony with the eternal, natural, and moral laws of the universe. As I said yesterday somewhere, the great Protestant theologian Paul Tillich has said that sin is separation. And what is segregation but an existential affirmation of man's tragic estrangement, his terrible sinfulness, his awful separation? And so we must work to get rid of segregation because it scars the soul. Does something in damaging terms to the personality of both the segregator and the segregated. It scars the soul. It scars the soul of the segregator in the sense that it so often leaves him with a sense of superiority while leaving the segregated with a sense of inferiority. And therefore, we must make it clear that segregation must go. And it must go in every area. And certainly, we must see this in this community or these communities. We must go all out to end segregation in housing. We do great injury to our children. Every white person does great injury to his or her child. And he allows that child to come up in a world that is two-thirds colored and yet live in conditions where that child never comes in contact on a person-to-person basis with colored people. We've got to learn to live together. One day in America, we must come to see that we have a noble and a great opportunity, because more than any other nation in the world, more people of different races and national backgrounds live here in America. And the reason we must work so hard here to solve the problem is because if we can solve the problem in America, the world can solve the problem, precisely because America is the world in miniature and the world is America writ large. And we must work to solve it. We must go all out and say all over this vast land that we will no longer adjust ourselves to segregated conditions and segregated facilities, because segregation is morally wrong and sinful. Now, the other point that I would like to bring out is that if we are to solve the problem of racial injustice in our country and make the American dream a reality, we must get rid of the notion once and for all that there are superior and inferior races. Now, certainly, all of the anthropological sciences have revealed to us that there is no truth in this idea. Great anthropologists like Ruth Benedict, Margaret Mitchell, Margaret Mead, rather, the late Melvin Herskovitz and others, have said over and over again that as a result of their long studies, they have found nothing to justify the idea of superior and inferior races. There may be superior or inferior individuals from an academic point of view within every race, but there are no superior and inferior races. And yet this idea still lingers around. It lingers around all over our nation. And it was out of this idea of superior and inferior races that white supremacy came into being. At one time, people used to justify, at least they tried to justify, their attitudes at this point on the basis of the Bible and religion. It's strange how people will use or misuse the Bible and religion to rationalize their prejudices and to crystallize the patterns of the status quo. And so it was argued from some pulpits that the Negro was inferior by nature because of Noah's curse upon the children of Ham. Then some decided to use the Apostle Paul's dictum as a watchword, "Servants, be obedient to your master." One brother had probably read the logic of the great philosopher Aristotle. You know, Aristotle did a great deal to bring into being what we now know as pharmalogic in philosophy. And in pharmalogic, there's a big word called the syllogism. The syllogism has a major premise, a minor premise, and a conclusion. And this brother decided to put his argument of the inferiority of the Negro in the framework of an Aristotelian syllogism. He came out with his major premise, all men are made in the image of God. Then came his minor premise, God, as everybody knows, is not a Negro, therefore the Negro is not a man. This was the kind of reasoning that prevailed. Well, by and large, people are getting away from this kind of thinking. Of course, it isn't gone altogether, because I was just reading not too long ago where one of our white brothers down in Mississippi said that God was a charter member of the White Citizens Council. But on the whole, we're getting away from the biblical and the religious arguments. It is done now on a more subtle sociological basis. The Negro is not culturally ready for integration, they argue. The Negro, if integrated in schools and other areas, will pull the white race back a generation. That argument comes into being. And then comes the other one that you hear all the time and that we hear. The Negro is a criminal. He has the highest crime rate in any city, any major city. And these arguments go on ad infinitum. The individuals who set forth these arguments never go on to say that if there are lagging standards in the Negro community, and there certainly are, they lag because of segregation and discrimination, poverty, ignorance, economic deprivation, and social isolation, breed crime, whatever the racial group may be. Criminal responses are environmental and not racial. And it is a torturous logic to use the tragic results of segregation as an argument for the continuation of it. We must go to the causal source. And then let me say to you, if we are to make the American dream a reality, we must develop massive action programs all over this country. The American dream is to be a reality. We in our lives must recognize that we must sacrifice. There are many people who want change, but they think the change can come without cost, without pain and without tension. But history is the long story of the fact that change cannot come without paying the price. Change cannot come without some suffering and sacrifice. And we must see that. For instance, we must honestly recognize that racism in housing will not be removed until there is an assault on basic structures of power that derive huge profits from the divisions of our society. We must come to see that we will never get rid of discrimination and segregation in housing until we take a stand against these forces that derive profit from it. But what may be profitable to a realtor is not necessarily profitable to a city. And we must come to see this. So we must work and develop a massive action program. Now, in order to get this massive action program, we've got to get rid of two false ideas, two myths that are disseminated all around our society. One is the myth of time. You've heard this, I'm sure. It is a statement which says that only time can solve the problem. And there are those who still say to the Negro and his allies in the white community, just be nice and patient and wait 100 or 200 years and the problem will work itself out. It takes time to solve the problem. Tonight as I stand before you, let me say to you, my friends, that that is an answer to this myth. It is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. And I can assure you that if the friends of freedom were as passionate and zealous about their commitment to freedom's cause as the enemies of freedom are to their side, we would have ended segregation and discrimination long ago. In other words, I'm saying that I'm convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme rightness of our nation, the forces committed to negative ends of our nation, have used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. And it may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people. Somewhere along the way, we must come to see that time does not solve all of our problems and that human progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals who are willing to be co-workers with God. And without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. We must help time, and we must realize that the time is always ripe to do right.